1039 1450 WKXL, NHTalkRadio.com. Feldis and Kale with you once again. Our contract has been renewed.
Renewed.
For at least one more show. And we are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And it is our pleasure, speaking for Dan and myself, to welcome back to Feldis and Kale, the executive director of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College, Neil Levesque. Neil, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks for having me on. I'm excited.
Well, Neil, you know what, Neil? We run a promo. It's like a 20-second promo from time to time on this station. Actually, you're featured in the promo, believe it or not. You are featured in
top
that
billing.
Promo.
Wow, have your ratings gone down because of that?
No, we were just hoping
skyrocketed.
You didn't want any residuals from it, or any royalties.
Yeah, we want to make that clear on the air that that's the case.
But we all know Neil. Is a great a political guy, and has been that way for a long, long time. And we love to talk politics with him. But right now, I just wanted to talk about you and your brother Keith a couple of weeks ago. Setting sail from Charleston, South Carolina, heading up the coast to Rye, New Hampshire. Neil, tell us how it all started. Was this in the works for quite some time?
Yeah, so my brother and I are both, we've been studying for our captain's licenses and been doing all this stuff. We've been boaters for a long time, but his dream boat was in Charleston, South Carolina, so on a Tuesday at 5 p.m., we rented a minivan, drove straight 16 hours to Charleston, hopped on the boat, and started coming up. So 950 miles out on the Atlantic. Really some amazing moments. You go in, you sort of go and you need fuel, and then you come into a harbor at night and drop an anchor and just sort of wake up in the morning and figure out where you are and keep going. But going through New York City, for example, the fastest I've ever gone through New York City, 25 knots through the East River, was really quite special. And you hit weather from time to time, but it was a good trip.
I guess so. You survived. You're here to tell us about it. Now the boat, you said it was his dream boat. Is this his boat, or one that you rented, or how did it work?
His boat, it's a 33-foot Grady White, so not super big, but, you're always getting ready for sort of the unpredictable. So when we went by Montauk towards Block Island, there was nobody out there, and we were the only ones, and it was nasty. I mean, I have black and blue marks to this day, just because you get slammed up against everything. And so, it was, it's not a, some kind of carnival cruise line type of thing. But it was, when you're 50 years old and you get to do something like that with your brother.
Sounds great.
Pretty good.
Yeah. People go on these quote-unquote voyages. They have a lot of time to reflect. Did you reflect on life and discover the meaning of life during this voyage, Neil? And if so, can you share it with our listeners?
I think I try to do that every day, and my students come in to see me, and they all have the same thing to say, which is they go, Neil, I don't know what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. What am I going to do? And I say, I don't either, and I'm 50 years old. But with some exceptions, you really can't read while you're out in the ocean, because you get seasick.
Yeah.
You're just kind of looking forward, and it's like going to church. You have a lot of time to think, and you can't really read a magazine or look at your phone too much.
So you were able to send pictures and transmit messages on Facebook, which I saw and made me very curious about the voyage. So obviously you had some kind of an internet connection out at sea.
I never lost it. And without exception, every time I went to go download something or look at something, I mean, we couldn't see land a lot of the times, but I always had cell reception, which is interesting because there's a lot of parts of New Hampshire.
Right.
That, if you're in Rye, New Hampshire, which, there's 150,000 people, no kidding, 150,000 people on the beach, on a hot summer day, and nobody can make a cell phone call.
Well, that's the lesson. Go out to the sea.
I guess so. You encountered some turbulent weather along the way.
Some of it was bad, but you know, when you come out into like Long Island Sound, it was calmer than some of the times I've been on Lake Winnipesaukee. So it was, and again, New York. When I was coming into the harbor, all I kept thinking was, this is exactly why this city is here and why it has prospered to the degree it has, because that port God made that port for commerce. I mean, it is perfect, and lots of things going on, much bigger than you sort of realize when you're in Manhattan, and quite something. Yeah, I saw Trump Tower, though, so I know that would be the next question, but I couldn't really see it from the East River.
Not for me.
But, no, I really applaud you guys. You know, I don't know whether you call it bravery, but did you ever feel in danger at all out there?
Well, I've spent a lot of time on the ocean, and I have a real strong respect for the sea, but I don't get scared per se. It's like skiing. You know that you could fall and hurt yourself, but you know what you're doing generally. We went through the Oregon Inlet down at Nag's Head area, and that was probably the hairiest harbor I've ever gone into. And if we had fallen overboard, you're dead, because there's just so much water turbulence with the different tides, and it's a really dangerous place. It's highlighted on the show Wicked Tuner, Outer Banks, if you remember that show.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That's the harbor they're coming in and out of. That was hairy, but it's really cool. You go into like ports, and we went into a port in Virginia, which is like a little island, and there are wild horses all over the place. I didn't see any, but apparently, if you pay the tour guys, they have carrots and stuff, and they'll come right out for them. But so you're waking up in different places with really a lot of friendly people, a lot of wonderful people, particularly down south. You know, very very friendly place. But for a little period of time, we were in the Intracoastal, and there's alligators. So you drive in this ocean boat, and it's fresh water essentially, and alligators, and it looks like you're, somewhere in Louisiana. It's wild.
Yeah, I can imagine. So were you well stocked with food and beverages on the boat?
Yep, full. There's a full kitchen. So I wouldn't call it. You sort of open up a can of raviolis and try to warm them up. It's not, going out to eat type of thing. But, we were fine. And, you were your brother. It's the greatest, he's my best friend. And we had a great time. And I can't say enough about it. I'd do it again in a second. They actually told him when he bought the boat, they said, we'll ship it up to you. He said,
no,
we're going to get it.
And you drove down to Charleston in 14 hours, huh?
I forget what it was. I have a CPAP machine, that helps you sleep. And it's like this contraption that goes over your face. I was going to play a joke on him at about 9 o'clock in the passenger seat, just hooking the thing up and saying, see you at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
But I didn't do that.
You didn't do it in the driver's seat either, did you?
Yeah, that would be kind of scary, on the Jersey Turnpike, looking over at the guy who's got the CPAP machine and the cruise control. But,
that is going to happen one of these days, That's going to happen.
If you drive up 89 enough like I do, you realize there's a lot more texting going on and typing of memos from the driver's seat than anything else on that road, I'll tell you that.
From the driver's seat, yeah, I know, for sure. That is great, and you do it again. The traffic wasn't too bad out on the high seas, huh?
No, it was perfect, and actually, going into Block Island, it was completely dead. Mm. We had thought that, this time of the year, things are starting to get going, but it was really quiet, and my wife was texting me saying, you know, there's four places that'll deliver you a pizza right to that marina. And I said, no one's at the marina. No one is on this island. There wasn't even a boat in the marina.
Wow.
I mean, it was, it's just completely dead. And, you know, you take these houses that are worth $3 to $5 million a piece, and you think, you know, they're only used really for, let's say, July and August. It's just amazing.
Yeah, really. So were you happy when you landed in Rye, or, you know, were you hoping for another, you know, couple of days, head up the coast a little bit more?
I would do it again. I will tell you this, that after that many days on the sea, when you get to the dock and you start walking down the dock, you have sea legs, and you just kind of start falling to one side or the other. And originally, you know, that was why the pirates were always, they were always thought to be drunk. Yeah. And people out on the, you know, seamen were always, you know, thought to be drunk. Well, the truth is that I don't know how these people that are driving a sailboat, you know, across the Atlantic that takes 3 to 4 weeks, when they get to Europe, I can't even imagine being able to walk. I had trouble walking for about 2 days.
Wow.
And it was really strange. And I was not drinking, so... it's a strange phenomenon for sure.
Well, that, you know, that sounds like something that, I mean, I know you have to have a lot of experience to do what you and your brother did, and you can't just, you know, pick up a boat somewhere and do it. What's the navigational process like? What do you have on board for navigation?
Well, we have all of the... you know, typical GPS and Navitronics and all of that. But my brother and I have studied pretty hard to get our captain's licenses, the Coast Guard. He's actually gotten his notification from the Coast Guard. I'm still waiting on mine. But there's a lot more to navigation than most people think. And you've got to be able to chart things out and do all of your mapping and all of your charting and in order to pass these tests. It's a very hard test to take, and I think it's much harder when you're 50. You know, I realized immediately why I didn't have a doctoral degree when I was taking the captain's license test, but it's a very hard test, and there's a lot to it, and a lot of these people, these, you know, master captains, you know, people who spent their life on the ocean, there's a lot more to this than you know, the person who passes the basic course and then, you know, drives a boat through Winnipesaukee. There's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And your brother was putting up flags on the boat along the way with each passing state?
So we had these little flags, and each time we'd go through and exit a state, he'd put up that state flag, and we finally got all the way through. I think there was like 10, I think,
yeah.
If I recall correctly. He had all kinds of, you know, ceremonial things. He changed the name of the boat, so you have to go through a very rigorous ceremony for that involves champagne and all kinds of fun things. He's a Harvard Medical School dentist. So I knew I was in good shape if I had, you know, any kind of toothache while I was on board.
You said it involves champagne. Does that involve, like, breaking it on the boat, like you hear about, breaking a bottle of champagne on the boat?
We poured it on the boat, and he actually read off this whole sort of old seaman's thing that allows you to change the name of the boat. There's a lot of things, you know, with...
You have to burn sage and stuff like that, or what?
Yeah, and I try not to burn anything that has a 250-gallon gas tank on it, but...
probably a good idea.
But, like, there's all kinds of spooky things, like you never bring a banana on a boat, it's bad luck. Changing the name of the boat without the ceremony, really bad luck. So, you know, you got to sort of keep it together. But, you know, if you have a fire or an electrical problem when you're out at sea, it's bad news. So you got to be ready for all that stuff.
No, absolutely. But no bananas on the boat, huh?
No bananas.
Never heard that one.
No? Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. What was the name of the boat?
You know what? I don't even know because he changed it while I went to get all the groceries. And, of course, I had to pay for all the groceries. So he was tasked with switching from the original name to Ischirus, which is the genus of the Mako shark family. So that's Isurus. So that's the name of the boat now. And he's a big Mako shark fisherman. He loves that. They're like Ferraris of the sea. They take a bait and it's amazing. So that's why he named the boat. You usually will name a boat after your daughter. And Ken, I know that you know why you don't name a boat after your wife, of course, because she will always be your daughter. Okay. My wife doesn't laugh at that joke, but that's the truth. Is, you know, so if you go to Rye Harbor, you'll see all these boats that are named like, you know, the Kelly Ann or whatever, and they're all named for people's daughters because you never want to name your boat after your wife, or you'll be getting some champagne and reading off the same little thing that my brother read off.
But at any rate, I applaud you guys for the expedition. I'm sure you're plotting another one even as we speak, so you'll have to keep us posted on that. But, you know, Dan, that Neil is always expanding his horizons. You know, he got into beekeeping. Are you still doing that, Neil?
Oh, yeah, I got my bees. Actually, the day after I got back, got my bees, and they're alive and kicking. And
have you been stung
yet? The ones I had... over the winter died, which is pretty, it happens a lot, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And there's a lot, sometimes you can figure out why and sometimes you can't. But so I had to get new bees and they're in there now, but there's not a lot of flowers out. So you have to feed them pretty heavy this time of the year.
Yeah.
So there you go. Always expanding his horizons is Neil Levesque, the executive director of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College. We will talk a little politics, Neil. Hang in there. Have to take a quick break. It's Feldis and Kale, 1039 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. Welcome back, 1039 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Feldis and Kale, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotions and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. You know, Neil Levesque, I forgot to ask you, did you do any fishing out there?
We didn't because we were trying to get ahead of the weather. My brother packed 21 fishing rods. That's right, 21.
21.
I hope his wife is listening to this. but we really didn't fish because we knew that there was a bad front coming into New England that we needed to get ahead of, so we just sped right through. But
yeah,
pretty exciting.
That's great. Well, Neil, you've been the executive director of the New Hampshire Institute for Politics at St. Anselm since 2009, doing incredible work in education, a lot of young leaders coming out of that. You know, today's political environment, especially with the issues surrounding disputes over baseline facts and a lot of kind of cynicism, unfortunately, out there. How do you deal with that in the context of the Institute for Politics for young folks who, you know, as you mentioned earlier, may come to you for advice, looking forward to maybe a career in public service, maybe just talking about civic life? How do you deal with that current political environment in the context of the Institute for Politics?
Well, the young people today have a lot of more optimism about their government than I think that people my age do. And so that's really wonderful because they are getting into politics. And that, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of people say, oh, they're college students, so they're all on the left. Actually, it's pretty much 50-50, depends on the year. And what I find is in today's politics, there's a lot of hypocrisy and people get really frustrated by the hypocrisy. And there's also, obviously, as you mentioned, this, I have my own facts and that's what I'm going by.
Yeah.
And we're seeing that actually today in the front page of the newspaper, there's a big blowback in the Republican Party in Washington regarding the election results and who is the legitimate president and whether or not members of Congress in the leadership recognize that we had a legitimate election or they don't. And this fact thing is pretty interesting because I think some of us probably had fights with our uncles when we were in college at the Thanksgiving table, you know, and he had his own facts. But now it's gotten much worse. And the internet has really plagued us with that. And, you know, so something appears on Facebook and you know, that's what we're going by. And that's a lot of these things, particularly in politics, are not true. People are making a lot of money in politics based upon people's emotions. And a lot of people don't recognize that the business of politics is very much alive and well. And a lot of people are using your feelings, your individual feelings, to profit. And that's what a lot of this is about. A lot of news is about that. A lot of internet stuff is about that. And I wish people weren't so susceptible to that.
And this discussion and what you just observed just now, Neil, is that something that is taught, that critical thinking of what's going on, about how you got to look at and try to arrive at baseline facts, and how there's a whole industry in terms of trying to play to people's either base instincts or emotions to distort facts? Is that something that you have and the Institute of Politics has made a priority to focus on? Again, whether you're right or left on the political spectrum, operating from a baseline set of facts is so critical to our democracy. Is that something that you've and the Institute has focused on and revved up lately?
Well, that's really an endorsement of the liberal arts education, which a lot of people sort of poo-poo these days and say, well, we don't need that. Just go into STEM and you don't need to critically think about anything. And they're wrong. And so the liberal arts education that the students here at St. Anselm get, I think, is helpful in that. Very helpful. But I think, too, when you're this Institute of Politics is a place where Democrats and Republicans are all the time, and they're here. We see them. We interact with them. And what you find out is that they all love their country. They all love their state, and they're doing what they can and what they believe is right for the benefit of their state. They're not out for money, politicians, most of the time. There's a few bad apples. And they're not out to sort of be mean to people. Generally, they're trying to do what they believe in, and we get to see that here. And that they're just because they're not the party that you're in doesn't mean they're all bad and terrible. Mm-hmm. It's refreshing because what happens now is that people are not seeking information when they go and turn on the news. They're seeking affirmation. And so they're turning on the news station that says, you, Neil, or whoever, Neil, you're right in your thinking. You're so right in your thinking, and this is why. And that's not news. And I see it every day on all, and it's on both sides, and it's very frustrating.
Yep.
And it, you know, I think it's getting worse, and it really clouds our judgment as to democracy is doing and what our democracy is all about.
Neil Levesque is with us, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College. How are things on campus these days, Neil? Operating normally?
Generally, I'm around my students. They are operating normally. Of course, we're all wearing masks.
Yeah.
But we've kind of come back to some level of normalcy. And you know, we have two graduations coming up. Last year's and this year's. So one's on Saturday in late May, and the other one's on Sunday, and you get to bring two people. You know, the governor has done away with the any state requirements as of the 7th, and so it's sort of up to you to practice what you think is your individual institution, what you think is acceptable. So we have two people coming, two guests per graduate. Mm-hmm. We have one guest speaker, and I think the good thing is that, you know, instead of a 3.5 hour graduation, it's probably going to be a little bit quicker, which is good for mothers and fathers and grandmothers and grandfathers who sit in the audience for 3.5 hours in the sun.
Yeah, very true. Very true. So that's going to be later on this month. And so there was no graduation last year. You're doing last year's later on this month.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, obviously a lot of us know that there was a lot of things that really went off the rails last year.
Yeah.
My daughter was a senior at Bishop Brady High School, and, you know, you don't really have any of your prom or your graduations in a car. So it was a tough year, but, you know, I think people are sort of coming out of it now. You can feel this optimism, I think, out there, and I think there's going to be a lot of spending at restaurants, on cruise lines, on airlines. I think a lot of people are going on Expedia now and spending money. I think this economy, if anything, the worry is inflation, and I think Yellen yesterday, you know, signaled that by the fact that she thinks that interest rates are going to go up. So they're going to pull back on some of this. If we have more big $2 trillion bills, that sends a lot more money into this economy. And I just don't see how we escape the pressures of inflation, which we have not dealt with really since the 70s.
Well, you're so right that people really want to do stuff. You know, people have been, you know, mostly in their homes over the last year plus, and not being able to go to concerts, sporting events, cruises, take family vacations. So I think you are going to see a tremendous spike in the not-too-distant future in the economy because of that.
Yeah, and if you take things that we know that have already, the prices have gone up, look at airline travel has gone up, look at gasoline prices have, you know, they've gone from about $2 a gallon to almost $3 a gallon. That's significant increase. And a lot of groceries costs have gone up. Lumber, you know, you used to be able to get a 2x4 for $1.75. They're, what, $9 now? And people who I've known who are building houses have to bank another $20,000-$30,000 in just lumber costs alone. So,
wow.
You know, it's out there. And I don't, you know, and on that, you know, house values, I do not know. And Dan, I know this is probably close to your heart. I do not know how someone who's in a sort of normal job, making a normal median amount of money, can afford to buy a house. I just don't know, because the house prices have gone through the roof, land prices, building prices, and I just don't know how people can do it.
Well, they really can't, Neil, you know, especially, you know, with the inventory the way it is, the prices the way they are. Look, I live in the south end of Concord. You put a home on the market and it gets scooped up within 2 to 5 days, and I mean just right away, and at drastically marked up prices. And so that's just kind of where the housing market is, and obviously the rental market with just over 1% vacancy rate in New Hampshire, 5.5% regionally, and 6.6% nationally. It's not a healthy rental market either, and the prices are, no pun intended, through the roof, especially for working families. So it's a big deal. I mean, Janet Yellen did walk back, though, getting back to the interest rate, did walk back her comment about yesterday anyways, interest rates going higher. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see, and obviously we'll see what Congress does, but in terms of these additional spending packages and inflationary pressure, I think we're kind of in uncharted waters, Neil, in terms of how this...
No pun intended.
No pun intended. Although Neil and his brother charted it out.
They did.
Yeah. They didn't even have road signs out there, you know. It's really a unique political time, I think, and unprecedented in many ways. And so I think it must be exciting being in your role as executive director of the Institute of Politics right now.
Well, I remember, you know, when I was a congressional staffer and, you know, a bill that was $1 billion or $10 billion was a big boy. And now they're passing $2 trillion pieces of legislation. That is incredible amounts of money.
Yeah.
And when you have the unemployment rate the way it is right now, and you have people who say, the problem at the restaurants is not the people aren't coming in. It's we just can't serve them because we don't have the help.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting dynamic. And then more and more money going back on the street. I think there's a lot of public support for these bills, but I wonder whether or not they'll have political consequences in the future.
Well, Neil, we're going to get you back soon, and actually the next time we'll talk a little bit more politics, but we always appreciate you coming on the show, and you know, look forward to your next visit here on Feldis and Kale.
Well, thanks to both of you, and I appreciate you having me on.
Take care, Neil.
All right, Neil, thanks. Take care. Bye-bye. Neil Levesque, the Executive Director of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics at St. Anselm College here on Feldis and Kale. We are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. We'll take a break and be back with more Feldis and Kale, 1039 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Welcome back, Feldis and Kale, 1039 1450 WKXL, nhtalkradio.com. Proudly, and I do say proudly, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and our local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And joining us is the executive director. This is a big executive director day show, Dan.
Sure is.
Yeah, we just had Neil
Levesque. It was a requirement.
Yeah, it is. We just had Neil Levesque on from the New Hampshire Institute of Politics, and now the executive director of Granite State Dairy Promotion, Amy Hall. Amy, welcome back to Feldis and Kale.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Ken. You all are bringing in the heavy hitters, aren't you?
We are.
We don't mess around.
That's the kind of show it is. That's the kind of program we run here.
You don't have international star ratings the way we do without doing that kind of thing.
That's very true. Very true. So, Amy, since the last time we chatted, what's new with you? Anything going on?
Oh, there's so much going on, Ken. You know, getting my feet back under me. You know, not to beat the ice cream chill to death, but it's finally I'm exhaling. We have the website done. I just have to hit unhide so people can't sneak a peek at who's on there yet this year till the brochure comes out. Next up, we're going to be rolling out actually a scholarship program in partnership with the New Hampshire Interscholastic Athletic Association.
Nice.
That recognizes leadership, stewardship, and health and fitness in the athletic world. Of course, you know, along with athletic performance, academic performance, based around chocolate milk, healthy living, and healthy eating. So we're going to be working on that and releasing that sometime toward the end of May. So stay tuned. If you know any high school athletes who you think will be a good fit, stay tuned to Feltus and Kale for all the details.
Wow. All right. You'll hear them exclusively here on, mm-hmm. on Feltus and Kale for sure. I understand, Amy, and you mentioned this to me briefly, that there is a correlation between dairy farming in New Hampshire and in Florida. How does that work?
Well, you know, I'm glad you asked that question because, you know, we're all about New Hampshire up here, obviously Granite State Dairy Promotion, but, you know, people should understand that, you know, my job isn't limited necessarily to New Hampshire. I have, you know, dairy producers all over the country that I talk to. It's good to collaborate and get stories from every corner of the barn, if you will. And, you know, one of the things that we're seeing, not just in Florida, you know, nationally, is the tremendous loss of our small dairy farms in preference to those dairy farms who are huge, the mega farms, the factory farms that you hear so much about. And, you know, it's sort of a devastating realization on how much we all really do have in common, not only in New England, but as far south as Florida. And I know we have a lot of snowbirds up here in New Hampshire, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Who go down to Florida. So, you know, local to them in the winter is just as important as local is to them up here in the summer in New Hampshire. And my contact down in Florida, Chad Rucks, he is in charge of Free Range 365. They have an entirely different farming system in Florida. Of course, they don't have snow. Their cows can be out on pasture 365 days a year. And in my conversations with him, it was quite shocking And we are fortunate in New Hampshire to have survived COVID for the most part with our dairy industry. You know, Florida didn't do so well. They had 75 farms coming into 2020, and it's looking projection-wise that they're going to be down to 65 farms come August. So it's one of those similarities that, you know, nationally, I think it's important for people to realize that finished product coming into your state, I don't necessarily care where you live. Here in New Hampshire, obviously, it's important. Is when I say finished product coming into your state, that means that your food isn't local. I mean, just to break it down simply, your food isn't local. Your milk isn't local. It's coming in from outside of the geographic parameters than you would like to see it coming from. So that's one of the biggest dangers nationally that every dairy farmer is facing when it comes to, you know, some of the farms that are out there milking 30,000 cows, 40,000 cows. It's a real concern in terms of concentration, almost a monopoly, if you will. Now, I love all dairy farmers. I love all dairy farms. I am not saying that these large, huge farms are mismanaged, that they're not producing quality milk. I am saying that the overarching issue here is that nationally what's happening is we're seeing small farms go out of business because they just can't compete with the populations that one giant farm can serve.
Mm. And so why the reduction of the dairy farms in Florida during the pandemic down to 65?
Well, you know, their situation is a little different up here in New Hampshire. Agriculture in Florida is, you know, centralized around oranges. You know, it's centralized around avocados, various different specialty crops, lemons. So in terms of what drives their agriculture, it's not necessarily dairy. So while Florida appreciates dairy, I'm not trying to suggest that, there are other commodity products that really drive that agricultural community in Florida. And here, when it came to CARES Act funding, you know, we live in a small community. People value dairy producers here in New Hampshire and New England, whereas in Florida, dairy producers are valued, but they're valued at a lower standard or ranking than some of the specialty crop producers.
So the 65 farms, I mean, they must be all a rather good size. Because I, you know, you think about, you know, how many dairy farms in New Hampshire?
Right now we have 94.
94 so, for New Hampshire.
Yeah.
You have 65 in Florida, which has, you know, many, many times the population of New Hampshire. So they must be getting a lot of milk sent to them.
Well, they are.
Yeah.
That goes back to the finished milk discussion, is that once a state can no longer provide enough product to feed their population as a whole or entirely, that's an issue. Now, in Florida, yes, they do have larger farms, larger dairy farms than we have here in New Hampshire, which is understandable because they have the landscape down there to be able to support a higher amount of heads of livestock, if you will. They have a greater capacity to pasture their animals versus that we have here in New England with snow, with ice. You know, what are cows going to graze on? Snow, that's not possible. So they stay in the barns. The concern is as, you know, dairy farms get larger and larger from outside of the region, outside of the East Coast, from the West Coast, and that milk starts to come in, we're going to see a lot more farms go out of business. So one of the things that I did want to discuss here is I want people to start looking in their grocery store at codes on milk. So here in New Hampshire, our milk code is 33. So that means that it is a local brand. There is a website called Where Is My Milk From? Okay, so if you go onto Where Is My Milk From, you can easily determine where that milk was processed. So that is a number that I think people need to be looking at a lot more when they are in the grocery aisle. So right now, I'm going to my fridge. You can hear me.
I hear
and
you.
My Market Basket brand right here has code 33 on it. So that tells me that it came out of the Hood plant in Concord, New Hampshire, and it most likely came from a New Hampshire dairy farm. So these are the things that I need people to understand when it comes to purchasing dairy products in the grocery aisle.
Where do you find that number?
It is on the top of the gallon, just under the cap. And when you see that number, it's the first two numbers. That indicates the processing plant that that milk came out of.
So if you see 33, most likely it came from the Hood Dairy.
Absolutely, most likely. And, you know, half of our dairy producers here in New Hampshire do send their milk to the Hood plant. Mm-hmm. The other half, of course, goes to Cabot. So, you know, there's a lot of locality when you are in, you know, the regular grocery store.
And why did we love all... I'm sorry, Amy. Go ahead.
No, that's okay, Dan. I could go on and I will never shut up. So jump right in.
How did we get 33 and not 603 instead of the number for New Hampshire Dairy?
Wouldn't that be simple? Wouldn't that be a simple way to go about it?
Yeah.
you know, it's a question that I don't have an answer to. You know, these are just assigned codes that the USDA gives. Specific processing plant.
So the Cabot, now those that, the milk that comes out of Cabot, though, would have a different number, obviously, right?
It would, yes, yeah. Because some of that will come out of New York, some of it will come out of Vermont, but keeping in mind, too, that here in New England, milk is a regional product. So if you see code 33, that doesn't mean it's 100% New Hampshire milk, it means that it's New England milk. You know, it's almost like, I guess the best way to break it down, you know, think about breweries, right? Like Woodstock Brewery, kind of like beer. And, you know, it's a complicated system, but if New England were the size of Texas, it would obviously be one state. So that's the way that I like to have people think about it. New Hampshire does not have enough dairy farms. It does not have enough dairy cows to be able to provide milk for the entire population of New Hampshire. So we have to work together as a region.
Amy Hall is with us, Executive Director of Granite State Dairy Promotion, our great sponsor here on Feldes and Kale. We'll take one quick break and then back with more Feldes and Kale with Amy Hall on 103.9 1450 WKXL NHTalkRadio.com. Heading down the home stretch. Feldes and Kale, Amy Hall with us, the Executive Director of Granite State Dairy Promotion, proud to present this program. Some weeks, you know, prouder than others, I think. Also, your local New Hampshire dairy farmers as well. And Amy, last week when we had you on the program, you said that you were looking for some help with the Granite State Dairy Promotion, maybe a part-time job. Any openings remaining?
Yes, it's increasingly difficult right now to find help. It's a weekend job. It's a fun job. You get to work with me. I mean, that alone is worth a pot of gold.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't get any more fun than that. That's for sure.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You get to drive the fancy milk van. We are still looking. We have ads out this week in the Weekly Market Bulletin, the New Hampshire Farm Bureau Communicator. So, you know, my fingers are crossed that we can find somebody who is a good fit, who can kick in and shares the same passion that I do for the dairy industry and helping to promote and support not only local products, but our local farms and the best people on the face of the earth, quite frankly, our New Hampshire dairy farmers.
We have just about a minute left. How do they get in touch with you?
They can send me an email, Amy, A-M-Y, at nhdairypromo.org.
Simple as that. Amy at nhdairypromo.org. What did you say?
.org.
Okay, very good. Amy Hall, always a pleasure to have you on the program, and we will look forward to your participation once again next week on Feldes and Kale.
Thanks, Amy.
Guys. Sorry I didn't take a breath. Next week, maybe I'll take a breath when we talk.
Oh, that's okay.
Well, we love all the information. Everybody's going to be looking at the numbers on their milk now.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Amy.
All right. Bye, gentlemen.
Take care. You know, Dan, that wraps it up.
It's that's a wrap.
Feldes and Kale, 103.9, 1450 WKXL, proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers.